KBOO is currently running a Kickstarter campaign to build a city of media makers. From February 8th to March 9th, you can become a media maker and help spread the word. Just go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter between now and March 9th to join.
And we also have a reconciliation process where we reconcile these girls after they have run to the safe house. And then after a few years, after we have taken them to school, we reconcile them with their parents and they have been accepted back in their homes.
In part two of our discussion, we're going to go more deeply into what this means and how it can be a model around the world. But I wanted to ask Christine about, you know, we've been talking for years now, as you've come to this country for the last 10 years, as part of the V-Day movement. But in this last year, with the election of Trump, what is the awareness of President Trump in Congo, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the message it sends?
You know, first of all, I think that Donald Trump is the president of the United States, and he's a guy who doesn't love black people and has no respect. Because if you have no respect for women, how can you respect black people? So I don't think he's an important character, or I don't know how I can call him, because I have no respect at all for him. And We are a movement. V-Day is a movement to fight violence against women. And when we see somebody like him who has no respect at all for human beings and for women, I mean, it means nothing for us.
Are you hopeful?
And we have no expectations, you know, from the U.S. That's why I believe in movement. And I think we have to be the change we want in DRC.
And we're going to leave this mess part of the conversation on movement, but we'll talk about this movement in part two, which we'll post online at democracynow.org. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us, and happy V-Day.
When radio got taken over by advertising, people in Portland decided to do it themselves, and in 1968, they created a space that was free from advertisers and independent from corporate or mainstream media interests, KBOO Community Radio. This is the very essence of DIY culture. KBOO was here in the 70s as people were taking back music spaces, in the 80s when artists were taking back music distribution, and in the 90s supporting zine and small press revolutions and all of the movements of self-expression. Help us build a city of artistic media makers. Long live DIY radio and join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
This is Kyle Carrezzi, reporter and producer for the KBOO Evening News. For decades, KBOO News and Public Affairs has welcomed radical and spirited activists in the Northwest and beyond. As Oregon evolves, KBOO is central to connecting the world to what Portland and the Northwest is creating. We put the mic in everyone's hands, and when you join the donor circle, you're powering the microphone to amplify the stories of people in your own backyard. Join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up and search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Radio trains media makers. We believe community resilience happens when citizens learn how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of citizen journalists to report on what goes on in the streets of Portland and far beyond. We know that with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city activated and aware through radio. Invest in Portland's future media makers and join KBOO on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland.
Sisters have died. the shame for what you do in God's name. And we will stand for the right to be free. And we will rebuild our own society. And we will sing, we will sing, we will sing our own song. When the ancient drum rhythms ring, the voice of
good morning. Here we are, Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland, be with you till 9 o'clock. We are supposed to have my regular second Wednesday of the month co-host Jacqueline Keeler on the line. We seem to be having some difficulties getting through to each other. Hopefully that will be resolved very shortly. We started out with Buffy St. Marie with Sing Our Own Song from her, I think it was 2016 release, Power in the Blood. I've got a quick announcement here. Red Power Standing Rock Part 2 screening discussion. Of course, if you weren't at Part 1, you can see Part 2. A video about the movement at Standing Rock, which we plan to be talking about here today some. That's this Saturday, 7 to 9 p.m. at People's Food Co-op. That's at 3029 Southeast 21st Avenue, just north of Powell Boulevard. It says, join us in the community room for a screening of Red Power Standing Rock Part 2 in this film from the Viceland Rise series. Red Power warriors descend on the Standing Rock camp to stand in solidarity and protect tribal burial sites from the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. After the screening, we will process the heavy truth delivered in this film and discuss ways we can take tangible action. Yes, so that's this Saturday at Good Old People's Food Co-op, 7 to 9 p.m. Don't have any more announcements. Hopefully we will get Jacqueline Keeler on the line. Let me see. She just texted me, I believe. Let me check out that. Huh. Says our line is still busy. Maybe there's something going on with our phone lines. I hope not. Maybe, I guess just keep trying. No other way. She's certainly not going to get in here from Hillsboro anytime real soon. that's a bear of a drive. Yes, yeah, so we're hopefully going to be talking about a couple of cases and the broader issues that they represent. Red Fawn, who was hit with the hardest felony charges of all the water protectors, and she had been in jail. I know Jacqueline was just in North Dakota for 9 days and working on a couple pieces for High Country News, one of them being sort of the aftermath of the No Dapple resistance movement, including Red Fawn's case, but there are also a number of other people still facing felony charges. The Standing Rock movement is not over. It has many repercussions, including on many of the individuals who took part in it. And this is the latest news that I have is that a judge in North Dakota accepted a plea bargain for Red Fawn Fallis, that's her last name, a member of Denver's indigenous community who was arrested, this is coming from a Denver paper, on October 27th, 2016, during demonstrations at the Standing Rock Indian Reservation. Actually wasn't on the reservation. Fallis was one of hundreds of water protectors arrested during the protests at Standing Rock, which were in opposition to the construction of an oil pipeline through native lands. But she faced some of the most serious charges, at one point including the possibility of life in prison related to an incident in which she was tackled by law enforcement officers and a gun was discharged multiple times. Just quickly look at this message here. Okay, we got another number. The other number, if my engineer is listening to try to call in, here he comes. So we're not sure what is going on with that technical problem. Okay, so I've been reading from this article about the Red Fawn case. In return, federal prosecutors have dropped the more serious weapons charge, discharging a firearm in relation to a felony crime of violence, which carried a minimum sentence of 10 years in prison. The next step is a sentencing hearing, which will take place sometime between April and June. Fallis' defense attorney, Bruce Ellison, he's parentheses, long, long time Native rights attorney, has said he will advocate for a sentence of 21 to 27 months, but federal prosecutors might push for a term of 46 to 47 months. For Denver's indigenous community, Monday's courtroom development signaled a resolution in the Free Red Fawn movement, which had caught on nationally but was centered in the Denver area where Fallis and some of her family members reside. Goes on. And then the other case, the other case that we're going to be talking about as soon as Jacqueline gets on the line here is the missing and I assume, presumed dead, but hope is always alive in these cases. Search for Olivia Lone Bear, a Native woman who disappeared from the Fort Berthold Reservation on October 24th. of last year, she was last seen leaving a bar, the Sportsman Bar, in a car. And the recent news is of, I believe, late January, the family of Olivia Lombaere has announced that they will begin canvassing several North Dakota cities outside of the Fort Berthold Reservation in hopes of tracking down the truck that she was last seen in. and that's, again, a much larger issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, which goes largely under the radar, including of law enforcement, both in Canada and the United States, and no doubt all over the world where Indigenous people live, who often live in remote rural communities, often are on in a frontline communities experiencing the disasters of modernization, extraction industries, rapid development that passes them by, yet they remain intensely vulnerable and prey to sexual trafficking, sexual violence. So, again, we're waiting to get Jacqueline Keeler on the line, and we're drawing a blank. We're not sure what is going on. So, the number here to call in, so I don't have to talk all by myself. I wasn't prepared to extemporize here. It looks like the phone lines might actually be not working. We had a whole new phone system put in, and apparently it is experiencing some glitches, which is unfortunate for talk radio when both your guests and your prospective callers in can only do so through our phone lines. But such is live talk radio. What can you do? My name's Paul Rowland. I'd love to talk to you at 503-231-8187. This is an interesting topic, to say the least, to bring up on Valentine's Day. The issue of gender violence, intimate violence, abuse, discrimination, in connection with, in particular, Indigenous peoples, which is obviously the focus of this second Wednesday of the month program with my co-host Jacqueline Keeler, is something that she has written considerably about. And I would encourage you, if you haven't checked out Jacqueline Keeler's writings, you can do so quite easily. Jacqueline Keeler, K-E-E-L-E-R. So the relationship of, as far as I understand it, I've done a little reading in this, of gendered violence to the process of colonization is extremely close. Not only were leaders of Indigenous peoples specifically targeted, political and spiritual religious leaders targeted as a way of destabilizing those communities. Women were regularly raped and taken away from their communities, and as a way of another way of destabilizing those communities. And that has continued to the present day. But we're not going to be able to continue to talk about that unless you want to. That or other subjects of interest to you. So leave it wide open. I got to see Sylvia Federici last night at the SEIU Hall. Maybe some others were there and want to talk about that. Author of Caliban and the Witch, a discussion of capitalism and gender violence. She connected it to the Me Too movement going on, and said that, of course, that's a very important movement, but doesn't go yet as deep as it needs to in terms of a much more systemic critique, rather than focusing on sort of legal punishment of perpetrators, have to look at the entire economic context in which women continue, despite being, at least in industrialized countries, relatively freed compared to previously, from the domestic sphere. Women got out into the workforce, but still, as we see in this, hold on here. Okay, well, let's take a musical break, and I'll see if we can get in touch with Jacqueline Keeler. We can cue up, just had my engineer come in. We're going to try to find some way of getting through to Jacqueline here. So let's take a musical break and come right back.
Wish star too far away to ever know. But if I had just one wish, I'd wish for you. You were gone, but in my heart I see you still. What I know can't be solved, but here you are. And of all my dreams come true, the best is now.
Snowbound, hey ho. Well, I don't know. sleeping on the floor like the best of friends, living on tea and odds and ends. Ah, were we lucky? Now it all depends. There was Cordell and me and Norman Brown, sitting around away from town. And me, I'm listening. Hey, oh, big mountain guys, watch the sunrise in your eyes, taking care of the elders' pride. Hey, hey, Mother Earth, hey, hey, Father Sky. And me, I've watched it grow, corporate greed and a lust for gold and coal and oil. And hey, now uranium, keep the Indians under your thumb. Pray like hell when your bad times come. Hey, rip 'em up, strip 'em up, get 'em with a gun. She was a friend of mine, and in May, in the snows of the winter time, we were running across the fields of Indian land, ducking bullets from the guns of a pale man. Oh, oh, oh. Woman hunted in the land, what did you say about uranium? She come to see me one day. I was living in a little place in LA. She was running from the field of the tailor's touch, singing, hey, I think I know too much about uranium. Grow corporate greed and a lust for gold and coal and oil. And hey, now uranium, keep the Indians under your thumb. Pray like hell when your bad times come. Hey, rip 'em up, strip 'em up, get 'em with a gun.
And that was the Uranium War by Buffy St. Marie from her Power in the Blood. Okay, so I apologize. I realize I had said that the phones weren't working, and then I kept on inviting people to call in. Help me get me out of this mess. Our phone lines are down. My guest, my co-host, Jacqueline Keeler, couldn't get through. We couldn't get through to her because our phone lines are down completely. So I'm left here by myself, and so you can't call in, and I really don't have that much to talk about. I'm going to see if I can find some more articles about the subjects we're going to cover, maybe do a little reading interspersed with this wonderful CD, which I've actually never heard the whole of, so I think it's worth giving a listen to. So we're going to just go back to some music. I'll go see if I can find some interesting tidbits to share with you for the next half hour. Ordinarily, we have call-ins, but we can't today because our brand new phone system has some glitch we're going to have to figure out. All right, we're going to go back to some music from Buffy St. Marie, and so it goes.
Hold your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damage? that is. So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source of all protection. Look right now and you will see she's only here by the skin of her teeth as it is. So take heart.
And we're back, and I've got a couple other KBOO stalwarts here to make it a little more interesting. We can keep hearing a little bit of Buffy St. Marie, but I've got Jenna.
Good morning.
Good morning. Bill.
Hi. Hi, folks.
Hey, look at that. We're on the air with Paul this morning.
Surprise,
we're being very social, but Paul, you have to sort of lead the discussion and say something controversial.
Hey, do you know the work of Sylvia Federici, Bill?
You know, I do sort of, and I have.
She was in town last night.
I heard about it because my domestic partner was at the discussion, but I didn't go.
Well, did you get some feedback? What did she think?
Well.
What does she talk about?
I'm not going to... I really know Sylvia better from reading some of her stuff, little. And I think that she's very exciting. Do you really want to hear what I have to say?
Well, sure, yeah.
Well, did you go to that event?
I went.
Okay.
I didn't really have my thoughts.
What was your opinion?
No, I think she's a very powerful... I mean, she's... I really like her because she... You know, she's kind of old school... In that, she's a radical of the old school, so that's why I was interested in what you have to say, Bill.
I am the deadest wood here, I'm proud of that.
I say that in a good way. Yeah. In a good way, wasn't making fun of you. In the sense that she's, there's like sort of political fashions come and go, but anyway, she was very steadfast in the idea that. That the only liberation is collective liberation. So, the idea of, what any individual goes through is important, but the reality of struggle is that, we can only struggle together. So, and there was a point to this.
There is a great essay that I recommend to everybody, which is called The Two Souls of Socialism. One from the top and the other one from the people. And the essay was by Hal Draper, who wrote a lot of great stuff. And he was determinedly and passionately on the side of the only liberation is liberation from below. And liberation from above, as there were so many socialists in the 18th and 19th centuries and still thought that everything had to be led by these elite thinkers, right? What was it called? In England, they had even had a name for that form of socialism, which actually ran things for a while, but they got destroyed because, in fact, they ran things as a liberal, benign autocracy. Anyway, Paul, why don't you continue with Sylvia? I didn't with her version of that.
Well, her basic point is that it's all she's a materialist. She believes that the economic structures determine our social relationships, including gender relationships, and the fact. I was talking before we took a break. I was talking about, the idea of women's liberation, that women, have
to a much larger extent, at least in, you know, countries like the United States and similar countries, have broken out of the domestic sphere and entered the workforce, you know, largely starting, you know, in the 70s, in a big way, in a mass way. And that, so that seems like there's been this sort of liberation, whereas she connected that to the Me Too movement moment, that actually the reality is that their need to basically sell their self on the market has sort of just been more diffused, rather than having to sell it just to the, you know, the husband dominant partner, that, you know, if you enter the workforce, whether whatever it is, you're subject to these various forms of coercion, abuse, harassment, so you're still subject to the same forces.
That was like mansplaining, how we get to be subjected to mansplaining on a daily basis, but be told that and be gaslighted that, oh, that's not happening, you're free, we're having free discussions, despite that I'm speaking down to you and belittling you and dismissing you and invalidating. I'm not venting at all here on the air from having a frustrating week of absolute mansplaining through simple things. Yeah, and I think that those things are often dismissed as we like to think that we live in this liberated world, you know, in this what we call modern, what are we, postmodern now or something. But this idea that we are liberated is frustrating on a daily basis, at least in my experience as someone who...
We'll first explain a little more what that term means, mansplaining, and maybe connect it to this broader issue that...
Oh, the mansplain. Yeah, the mansplain is... I'll give you an example, something really simple from my week. I tried to just reach out to an IT person. I said, hey, I think your website's broken. And then I explained it. I have coded a website myself. I try to use language so I know what I'm talking about. And the first thing I get back from this person, you know, is this, from this man, is to get this email that is talking to me like, I don't know, like I've never used a computer before, and do I understand what a web browser is? And just absolutely speaking down to me. And eventually I was able to explain it to him the same way four times before he finally believed me, which then said, oh my goodness, you're so right. And the thing is that I didn't explain it any differently all four times. It was just that I was insistent that I wasn't going to change my truth. But yet
it was like a hammer. You had to batter
yeah,
it.
Yeah, just your website's broken. Your website's broken. It's not me. But until I provided him with screenshots with multiple levels of evidence that I was not stupid and that I knew what I was speaking about, you know, this is every day, just talking to a plumber, moving through the world, you know, trying to just go to a gas station. So you can imagine what it comes to when it comes to things that are much more consequential in my life, such as like a workplace or family or relationships, like, oh goodness, what it does on the domestic sphere is it's exhausting.
Yeah, you know, I remember I think when the word was invented, I'm not quite sure, I'm playing the historian here, but this was in the 20th century at least, or the 20th, no, there was a shot of the subway in New York, and, you know, there's a lot of people crowded together, and then there's a couple of men with their legs spread out, you know,
And
it's like they had the right. They had the right just to sit there while everybody else is pushed together.
Yes.
And they took up a couple or three seats.
Yeah. This is the thing I experienced, especially when I was living in San Francisco.
And that's in everything.
Right?
Yeah.
You could be on a very, very busy, you know, Muni, and this... Here you'd see this man spreading his legs, taking up all this room, and sometimes you'd have these people beside them turning sideways,
yes.
Still allowing him to man spread. And I remember trying to explain this at the time to my partner, and he just thought I was ridiculous. He said, well, a man can't sit with his legs together. It's a dangerous thing for him. So he mansplained to me why this was like so dangerous. And I just didn't understand, because I saw men crossing their legs all the time. And at least just like sticking them together. Like, why? I don't know. It's like they're trying to catch a ball or something. But yes, this happens all the time. And, you know, the funny thing is with that article is that, and when that happened, I didn't even realize at the time that I was allowing people to do that. It was so normalized in my life to just allow a man to manspreading to me, and even to say, excuse me, you need to move over because I need to spread my legs. But that was normal for me.
Yeah. You know, I sometimes when the man didn't look dangerous, you know, some of these guys are, unfortunately, men to protect themselves through the crazy guys who, when they're challenged, in fact, act out physically. And, of course, they're not punished very much, so it all continues. And in so many ways, of course, it's worse in the social because it's even harder to sort of struggle against. But I want to claim I want to claim some credit. Sometimes when the guy didn't look too dangerous, I would say, excuse me, everybody's sitting here like that. I'd like to sit right over here. And I never got attacked anyway. So, but sometimes I would imagine myself doing that and then say, oh, what the hell? It's only four more stops where we're stuck in here. Why take the risk? No, there is a threat of violence, of course, and especially in domestic life.
Toxic masculinity that is, you know, as Paul's saying, you were saying, you know, it's the collective struggle, right? You have to recognize, at least in my opinion, you got to recognize how struggle spreads itself across. And like when we're talking about feminism these days and we're talking about women's liberation, so much of the time I think, well, why, you know, we have to be talking about that toxic masculinity too that puts men in positions that they often don't want to be in either and have to act in ways that, you know, the proving to be manly. And yeah. It can be a dangerous thing.
But Sylvia Federici, getting back to her.
That's what I'm
on,
yeah.
Well, I mean, because how to connect this, because her continual fundamental point is that, you know, there's an economics to it. So, you know, men taking up more space either verbally through, you know, mansplaining or through taking up physical space in public on the public transportation or whatever is just an example of what's the underlying thing, which is that, you know, men are taking up more space economically by gathering the resources.
Yeah.
And she also made the point that, you know, so women entered the workforce en masse, but still have a much lower wage earning capacity because of their inferior position economically, and that just that means that they work, but they don't really gain that liberation because they're never able, relatively unable to gain the autonomy that one needs within
the resources to be able to fight
right.
back. Yes,
right.
Although you know. It's there also, there's even more, I don't know if Sylvia talks about it, I think she does actually, that since men don't want to do housework or especially childcare and are no good at it and don't want to learn, women have this responsibility for children. And that also limits their, you know, they're forced into that and it's wages without housework, which she's famous for. That's her major, right? She was a wages for housework person. And wages for housework is very controversial and it's probably not a good idea. You don't want to monetize everything in life. It seems to me what you really have to have is a social provision for childcare and other things and shorter hours. There's a lot of ways that you don't want to monetize. In any event, I'll get off in a second. But I think what that group like Sylvia argues, and there are people who argue that especially about racial minorities, how there's more people being killed by police today on the streets than maybe were killed during lynching period. It's hard to know the figures of either because they're not. But I think those arguments are in fact right in some ways. But what it doesn't do, it doesn't recognize that women moving into the workforce, and to some extent it was capitalism wanted more workers and cheap ones, and so they didn't, resist women, in fact, competing for employment. It's more people, and all the wages go down when you have 20 people competing for one job rather than eight. Women in the workforce, though winning, makes, in fact, has given them much more resources to fight back. as a group, women are so much more powerful today than when, in fact, they were limited to caring professions at very low wages and did not have reproductive rights. It seems to me there really have been gains, and I don't think Sylvia wants to talk about them as much as it should be, that there have been really powerful gains, and people are now, you can talk about in liberal ways, well, they become citizens, which is right. They were not citizens. Now they can, people can fight back. All the subordinate can fight back, almost all. There are some who can't, actually, still, but who have no power whatsoever, and are, but it seems to me that the dynamic has changed, and it's changed in the direction of people liberating themselves, having more possibilities for liberating themselves. There are so many reasons not, though, because there are so many incentives to climb on the backs of people to get up there and to even make a living wage. You're competing with so many people, and you've got to crawl ahead of them. So that really undermines solidarity a lot.
Right. It's, yeah. It's still seen. The focus in our culture is still on the individual, whether it's individual success, whether it's freedom, cultural freedom to choose this or that, and the whole solidarity has been eroded. It seems like, but maybe this new reaction to a blatant sexual misconduct, especially in the workplace, is what we're being talked about. Maybe that is Sylvia Federici was heartened by what seems to be a growing number of younger women who are seeing that maybe they actually have something in common with women of Sylvia's generation who are kind of fighting the early frontline fight for some sort of freedom within, especially the domestic, quote, domestic sphere, that she saw hope that there seems to be a sort of a new wave coming. Who knows where that's going to go?
Well, Bill, as you're talking about, I think it's important to recognize accomplishments and progress, because I don't know about other people, but I need that for hope. When I look at specifically like this struggle, it's so long, right? Any sort of struggle to overcome it is going to be a long, long fight. And so I think it's important, definitely, to recognize, hey, we do make some steps, but at the same time, I can, from my own experience, understand why a lot of the times there is a want to just stay away from that conversation, not to invalidate it or not to ignore it, but just because there are so many things to talk about, to constantly just be reminding people to reframe the struggle, that it's like, don't become complacent because of the progress that we've made. Like the Me Too movement, it is shocking for some people, which is weird to me that it's shocking. It's like, oh, you're surprised that there's high-powered executives and people who aren't high-powered being accused of these sorts of things.
I think it's some of the details that are shocking.
Yeah, those things, I'm just like, oh, really? But at the same time, when I look at my lived experience, I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. The Aziz Ansari story sounds pretty normal. I don't know if I've ever met someone who is quite as powerful as Harvey Weinstein, so I've never had an opportunity to have to endure that, but that same the sentiment where it comes from, and that moment where someone is trying to use the dominance over you and just make you feel terrible that you aren't quote unquote enjoying their attention, that's a normal part of my experience in life.
Let me just update people as to what's going on here. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I've got Jenna Yokoyama and Bill Resnick, two other KBOO volunteers here. Grabbed them in the hallway in extremis because the phone lines are down. So my planned program, which was my regular second Wednesday of the month co-host Jacqueline Keeler, who was going to talk about her 9-day trip to North Dakota for High Country News, and a couple major stories she's working on, and some other things that didn't work out because she was going to be on the phone, and nobody can call in because our phone lines are down. So we are just improvising here, and I hope you're enjoying it. And don't try to call in because you can't.
Anyway, back to the subject matter, which was, the powerful men. You know, in some ways, they're so damaged. They're sort of the stories that come out that no one could really invent. I mean, Harvey Weinstein is sort of, they're hugely damaged men. And, I mean, that's no excuse, and they have to be stopped. But, you know, and I think as Sylvia, in fact, points out a lot, there's at the bosses at every level, men at every level, in fact, use their power to gain what they want from people, whether it's humiliation or what is an absolutely unaffectionate sexuality or whatever that they do. They all have their own crazed needs. So what's also extremely heartening is to see that women janitors are now organizing, and those and women and nannies and people who worked in the house. I mean, I sort of hesitate to talk about my youth in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we lived in a working class neighborhood. My father is extremely frugal, but my mother wanted to have somebody to clean up the house. That was the one thing that, and he relented. She was sort of a wannabe club woman, and she was a very wonderful woman, but she didn't work for pay, and things were sort of straightened, but the one thing they had was a very, very cheap black house cleaner, basically. And I never did, but my friends, it was very, very common to sort of have your first sexual experience of any kind, I don't mean genital sex, but sort of touching and stuff, with the black maid, believe it or not. That was in the 1940s. So it was in the late 1940s. And
this is something you all talked about?
That was part of the game. I mean, this was not genital touching. This was sort of brushing up against, sort of feeling up, but you didn't. I mean, this was 12-year-old.
And they had to put up with it, obviously.
12-year-old. They had to put up with it. It was just sort of a joke. And people, it was.
That's heartbreaking.
It was horrible. I mean, when you look back, horrific. I didn't, incidentally. I was always very retarded when it came to sexual aggression, thank God. Sexually, even anything.
I mean, but, was there ever recognition? Do you ever remember, conversations amongst, you know, your peers of maybe you shouldn't be doing that, you know?
No. It wasn't just them. It was the boys who couldn't make it athletically. They were also, and who didn't look good, and who came from the class system was so alive, even in the mid levels of the working class, or self-exploiting little executives and business owners. There was all of this stuff going on in the schools, and it still does. Like in the bullying, is just another example. The kids pick up all these cues from the society to find pleasure in
here. Now that we're confessing, and still happening. One thing I really regret in my school days was calling girls that weren't considered attractive dogs. I don't think I did, but I certainly never said anything. You know. I still feel terrible about that. I mean, it's on the scale of things, it's not like a huge, but it's really ugly.
It is so ugly, and if you're a boy, you sort of go along with it because the other guys are doing it, right?
Right, so it's that toxic masculinity factor of you have to be socially accepted.
You're completely, sort of shy and frightened and seeking the company of and support of other males, you know.
Okay, so then how then do we do that? How, right? Because I believe that one of the most powerful ways that toxic masculinity can be undone is to have, male identifying people speaking to one another and having these conversations with one another about, like, kind of, I don't know if it's like this. I'm not a man, so I've not had these conversations. But what, in your lived experience, is an effective way to create change?
I heard a great story. I can't remember who told it. Maybe wouldn't want their name on the air, but they were on the bus, and they heard there's some men, young men on the bus, and one was talking about his girlfriend, I think. Anyway, used the B word, and the other guy said, "Did you just call her?" I guess, can you use that word on the air, right?
No. This is not used. That's not.
Anyway, did you just call her the B word? And the guy was like, kind of taken aback, you know. And it played out like, and then somebody else came in and they like had this conversation around that. And she's like, it was like, yeah, you go, guy. You know, it was like, she's very heartened. It actually, she didn't expect, you know, them to, at all, to, you know, have that encounter. And it seemed like a, you know, a sign of things changing, maybe, who knows.
But you know, there's several B words, Paul, incidentally, that women get adorned with. And one of them is the female dog word, right?
Yes.
And the other one comes from, I'm not quite sure, breaking up cement, or the ball breaker upper. Women who fight back are but in some ways they sort of recognize there is sort of now a desire to get away from women who fight back, but you can't, because they may be in a superior position, which often used for when a woman gets into a low managerial or high managerial position, they are a ball breaker. And you hear that a lot too. I
think that just means that they finally reached the some power level that is that to equal of a man. So there you go.
Yes, and so they
well, we got to wrap up this improvised conversation here. I think we're just about at the end of the show. I want to thank you, Jenna and Bill, for stepping in extremis here. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
what
Paul.
KBOO Community Radio is all about. Anyway, we had hoped to have my regular co-host, Jacqueline Keeler. I was talking to her about when she might be able to come on. It might be next week, but I think she's going out of town. Anyway, stay tuned. We'll continue to have her on a regular basis and continue to do this show every Wednesday morning here on KBOO Portland. Thank you very much. Okay.
Help us help you keep Portland weird. Join Contessa de la Luna of the World Famous Confessional for the 6th annual Contessa de la Luna Valentine's Spectacular and Fashion Show. We're giving away a $100 cash prize plus live performances by Contessa de la Luna. Get your weird on and bring a date. Advanced tickets available at Brown Paper Tickets. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. That's Thursday, February 15th, 7 to 9:45 p.m. Feel the love of your other Contessa de la Lunatics. Contessa de la Luna's Valentine's Spectacular, Thursday, February 15th at the Clinton Street Theater, 7 p.m.
KBOO Radio trains media makers. We believe community resilience happens when citizens know how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of citizen journalists to report on what goes on in the streets of Portland and far beyond. We know that with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city activated and aware through radio. Invest in Portland's future media makers and join KBOO on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
This is KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director Zella Zellis-Marchand. KBOO builds a city of media makers so that you can empower forces for positive change like the Me Too movement, so that you can say Black Lives Matter and have a place to proclaim that love knows no gender, race, or creed. In donating to KBOO, you are taking action and making history by funding broadcasts that not only keep you informed, but are informing the next generation. Join us on Kickstarter today. Look us up. Search for Help KBOO Build a City of Media Makers, and thank you for your support of KBOO.
And this is KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what we have coming up for you this morning for the Public Affairs Strip till noon. First, on Political Perspectives, we present On the Ground Radio with an interview with Gerald Horn on his new book, The Apocalypse of Settler Colonialism. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And then at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock on The Dirtbag, Glenn Andreessen answers your garden questions, assuming that we can, we'll have the phones back in working order. And he'll offer updates about his project to breed apricots west of the Cascade.